But now I want to think a little bit about motherhood. What are a mother's goals? What is the purpose of being a mother? And I really think that the answer to that question depends on whom you ask. Do we get our idea of motherhood from the culture? Do we get it from the scriptures? Where do we get it? What do they say about motherhood? I think the Bible really challenges a lot of our culture's assumptions in so many ways. And to illustrate that, as it relates to motherhood, I want to show how I think if we look to our culture for answers on what it means to be a mother, I think that makes Mary, the mother of Jesus, a failure as a mother. Let me show you what I mean. In answering the question, what are a mother's goals? A lot of people would say that, or feel like their goal as a mother, their purpose as a mother, is to make sure their children grow up and get a good job. Jesus was a prophet. That's kind of like your kid coming home from college and saying, I'm going to be an art history major. The prophet, no offense to art history majors, it's a wonderful thing. But it's not always the first, the fast track to the most high-paying jobs. And that's what Jesus was. He was a prophet. Not the highest class type of job in that day. So as far as that goal of motherhood goes, Mary didn't quite do it. If the goal of motherhood is to make sure and ensure your children make a comfortable living, Jesus never had a home. He was supported by his followers, by people in towns he went to throughout his whole life. If the goal of motherhood is to make sure your children associate with good people, Jesus associated with whores, thieves, and con men. If the goal is to raise up good citizens, Jesus was accused of treason and crucified for it. If the goal of a mother is to make sure your kids find a good husband or wife and raise lots of children, well, disregarding Dan Brown and the Da Vinci Code, which has some fairly weak historical basis, Mary failed at that task as well. Jesus had neither. And if your purpose is to make sure your kid has a long, healthy life, of course, Jesus died on the cross at age 33 or thereabouts. I think the Bible, I think Jesus turns a lot of our assumptions on their heads. And I think the same is true with motherhood. I think there's a higher calling that helps us to understand in that context what motherhood is. Helen Lee is the author of a book called The Missional Mom. She also has a website of that name. And she talks about encountering and having conversations with women who say motherhood is the highest calling in their lives. And this is what she says. We need to recognize that whether we are mothers or not, we share with all Christ followers the same calling to love and be in relationship with God first and foremost, and the same mission to be his witnesses to the ends of the earth and make disciples of all nations. This proper understanding of calling and mission gives us the right context within which to understand our role as mothers. Do you see what she's saying? That motherhood is a calling, but it's not the highest calling. It's a sub-calling to the Great Commission that we've been talking about the last few weeks, to go into the world to make disciples of all nations. I think mothers are called to be on the front lines of disciple-making. The last couple weeks, actually, since Easter, we've been looking at the last three verses of Matthew's Gospel, which is often called the Great Commission. And I think, lest you thought I was going to get too far off topic this week and for Mother's Day, I think that motherhood really fits into and is understood best within this Great Commission to go and make disciples of all nations. And so I want to look this morning at two texts that give us a vision for motherhood. And I think they show two ways how mothers can fulfill that calling of making disciples. The first passage is in 2 Timothy, the one that was read earlier, chapter 1. And I think 2 Timothy shows us that mothers make disciples by having a living faith. Timothy is a significant leader in the early church. He's a pastor, he's one of Paul's proteges as a young leader. And Paul writes to him, and he says, "I am grateful to God, whom I worship with a clear conscience, as my ancestors did, when I remember you constantly in my prayers, night and day. Recalling your tears, I long to see you so that I may be filled with joy." This is obviously someone that Paul cares deeply about. And he says, "I am reminded of your sincere faith, a faith that lived first in your grandmother Lois and your mother Eunice, and now, I am sure, lives in you." Paul calls upon a faith that he knows that Timothy is familiar with. Paul is saying, "I see a family resemblance between you and your mother and your grandmother." And it's not really a physical family resemblance. I can see the faith that was in your grandmother, that was in your mother. I can see that at work in you. And I love how he uses the term "lived in." He says, "I'm reminded of your sincere faith, a faith that lived first in your grandmother. Now I am sure lives in you." That's an action kind of idea for faith. It lives there. It dwells there. It's active there. Last week we talked about the difference between showing someone the gospel and telling someone the gospel. And I think that's the idea. That Timothy's mother and grandmother had a living faith that was evident, that he could see in her life. It's common knowledge that children learn from example. You can tell them and tell them and tell them things, but what really makes the most difference is what they see in how you live. And this might be less common knowledge, but many studies back up the fact that it's parents who have the most influence in their children's lives. You might not feel that all the time, but it's true. And so, it's I think, our job, if you are a Christian mother, a Christian parent, for that matter, to ask, can my children see Jesus alive in me? On Easter, we talked about how our lives can tell the resurrection story to the world. Is my life telling a resurrection story to my kids? Can they see the difference that Jesus makes in your life? Because you have a living, active faith. I don't think this is a matter of just passing on a religion or a tradition. It's a matter of showing someone a living faith, an active relationship with God. Mothers make disciples by having a living faith. Second, mothers make disciples by being a mother to those who need one. Mothers make disciples by being a mother to those who need one. And for that, I want to flip to Romans 16. And this is a passage probably not a lot of us have really looked at before. But in Romans 16, Paul is kind of giving thanks to people. He's speaking very personally to the people that he's writing to and talking about some of the people who have made an impact in his life. And in chapter 16, verse 13, he says, "Greet Rufus." Now, that's a man, not a dog. "Greet Rufus, a chosen in the Lord, and greet his mother, a mother to me also." We do history by big names. We are told to remember all the big names, the big wigs of history. And even for those of us who read our Bibles, we tend to skip over chapters like Romans 16 because it's a list of all the small people, the small names there. Many of us want to focus on the real content, the theological content, or the application, the commands that Paul gives. And so we skip over this part. But Paul, as one of the great missionaries of the church, knows that the mission that we have as Christians is about community. It's a collaborative mission. It's not a mission just for the bigwigs. It's a mission for all of us who have come to know and have a living faith in Jesus. Paul was a traveler. He was all over the place. And so it was significant to him that Rufus's mother acted like a mother to him. And I don't know all the ways she did that, but I'm sure she cared for him. I'm sure she provided for him sometimes that he had need. What does a mother do? I don't know, but it made an impact on Paul. And she made an impact on the mission of the gospel. The New Testament, in many ways, redefines family for us. Jesus in Mark chapter 3. At this point, he's sitting teaching his disciples, and he's told that his mother and his siblings are outside. And his mother and brothers think he's a little crazy at this time. And the people said, "I think you should go out, Jesus, and talk to your mother and your brothers and sisters who are here." And most of us would say, "Of course." But what Jesus says is he looks around, and he says, "Here are my mother and my brothers and my sisters. Whoever does the will of my Father is my mother and my brother and my sister." Paul, in 1 Corinthians 4:15, is speaking to the Corinthians, and he's saying, "I became your father through the gospel." Because he was the one who shared the gospel with them, the good news about Jesus. He was the one who invited them into the kingdom of God. He became, in some sense, their father. The New Testament redefines family and says that it's God's family that has priority in everything over our biological families. Now, it's not that our biological families are not important. It's not that they don't have significance or purpose. But they're sub-callings to this greater invitation to be a part of God's family, to have spiritual relationships, gospel relationships that connect us. And it's a common phrase that blood is thicker than water. Well, the waters of baptism, in this case, are actually thicker than blood. The church grows through spiritual reproduction more than it grows through biological reproduction. Or at least that's the intent. We're not just supposed to gather here and wait for all of us to have babies so we can grow, okay? We go out and we share the story of Jesus. We share this good news with people and invite them, not just into a church family, not just into a biological family, but into God's family to be His children, His sons and daughters. That is how the church grows. And the kingdom of God values spiritual reproduction probably more than it values biological reproduction. And so, as the New Testament redefines family, it also redefines motherhood. What does motherhood, then, redefined by the kingdom of God, by the Great Commission, this call to make disciples, what does that look like? And I just want to explore this for you, for those of you who do have children right now, and for those of you who may not. And I'm speaking particularly to women, because it's Mother's Day, but I do think this has application for men as well. If you do have children right now, if you're raising kids, if you have kids in the house, the first thing I think it's important to understand as a Christian, that the calling is first and foremost to make disciples. Your primary goal is not to make sure your kids get a good job, is not to make sure they find the right spouse, is not to make sure that they make lots of money, or even just to build their self-esteem. Your primary goal as followers of Jesus is to help your children grow as followers of Jesus, to have a living faith, to allow them to take risks based on faith. I think as parents, a lot of times our inclination is to protect our children no matter what. Faith risks. And so that changes our goal as parents. If our goal is to make disciples, not just protect our kids, but to make disciples, you have to let them take risks based on their faith. And you have to let them see you take risks because of your faith and the calling that God has given you. Your primary goal is to help your kids grow in humility as humble people who love God and who love other people. And this mission isn't just reserved to your kids. Now, Helen Lee, again, in one of her blogs that I posted online this week on Facebook, talks about how there are different seasons in the life of a parent. And as a parent, you are going to have times where you are more focused on your kids, and you have to be more focused on your kids than at other times. But the calling is not just reserved to your own kids. Your kids, as a mother, as a father, you're going to interact with the friends of your kids. You're going to interact with the friends of your kids' parents. You're going to get to interact with a lot of people. And if your goal is just to mother your kid, if that's your highest calling, you're going to miss an opportunity to really make an impact on a lot of people's lives. Maybe your friends' kids don't have families who care for them like you care for your kids. And that's an opportunity for you to be a mother to them as well. So keep your eyes open for those opportunities to make disciples. if you don't have children right now, maybe you have children, but maybe they're out of the home. Maybe you can't have children. Maybe you've never had children, or maybe you don't have children yet. You still have a purpose in the kingdom of God. If motherhood is the highest calling in life, that's one of the reasons that so many women feel so desperate and purposeless if they can't have kids, or once their kids are out of the home. That is not the highest calling in your life. You have a great purpose that God is calling you to make disciples. You can do that in a variety of ways. If you can't have kids and you feel like you're still at a mothering age, adoption is a very significant option. And I hope you consider that, even if you are able to have kids. Because there are so many kids who don't have mothers out there, or fathers for that matter. Consider it. It's a process. But I hope as a church that we can come along people who will really want to take that seriously. Foster parenting is an option. Looking around at church and seeing young women growing up here, that is an opportunity for you to be a mother to them, to take them under your wing, to teach them, to guide them, to nurture them in their faith. There are lots of people around here who could use an extra mother, so to speak, who is going to help them to become a disciple and a follower of Jesus. Be a mother to someone who needs a mother. That is how you can impact the kingdom. That's how you can live the resurrection life, by stepping out of the home and saying, who can I serve and care for and nurture and love and teach? Today is Mother's Day, and in some ways it may be a Hallmark holiday, but it is a great opportunity to give thanks for someone who's been a mother to you. And so I really encourage you all to do that today. That might be your mother, someone who raised you, or it might be someone else, another woman who has shown you a living faith, who has shown you what it meant to love God and to love other people. Take time today to thank God for them, and to thank them individually for that. Today is also a day to consider how you are impacting the kingdom of God as a potential mother, whether biologically or whether just as someone who's making disciples. Timothy's mother and grandmother, Lois and Eunice, are remembered for the impact that they had on this young disciple who became a significant leader in the early church. Rufus's mother, we don't even know her name, but we have her memory because she impacted Paul, this great missionary of the faith. How are you making an impact on the kingdom? Who is going to say of you one day, you know what? I recognize that faith in you. I recognized it in Tammy, in Gwen, in Sandy, in Tina. I see that faith. I recognize it because you made an impact on someone's life. Who is going to be able to grow up someday and say, this woman was a mother to me? That is an impact that you can make, whether you have your own children or not. And today is a day to think about that legacy that you're leaving for the mission of the gospel. As you celebrate your mothers today, let's take time also to reclaim the kingdom call to make disciples in whatever role and opportunity God has given us. And we're going to take some time to do just that. We're going to have some time for reflection. And during that time, I just invite you to think and be thankful for your mothers. Thank God for your mother or someone who is like a mother to you. And consider what ways can you impact the kingdom of God as you have opportunity to make disciples yourself. So we're just going to take a few minutes for that reflection.